Hey, thanks a bunch, JP. Hope everybody had a happy Thanksgiving. I'm sure it was fabulous. I'm really happy for you. You know, every one of us has an opportunity to try to evaluate what's going on in their lives. You've got to manage your health. It's completely up to you. You have to be your own best advocate. I think that's like pretty common knowledge. I don't remember anybody forcing me at gunpoint to eat, something I shouldn't. I think I did it of my own free will. But you know what? There's a time and a place where your mind starts thinking, okay, how's this going to play out long term? What's going to happen to me if I keep going down this road where I feel horrible all the time? I'm completely exhausted. My sleep is rotten. I hurt all over. I have constipation. Or I want to be fair here. What if you have chronic diarrhea? Well, that wouldn't be good either. And so whatever your body is telling you right now, you need to listen to it. And I was thinking about last week, I meant to talk about some flavonoid compounds because in my mind, in my heart, I want to give you something good that you can put into practice today that you can take and put into practice. And the thing of it is, it's easy to do. It's there anytime you want. Well, one of the things that I see routinely is people that have chronic joint problems. And when you say chronic joint problems, it can be as far extreme as watching a person limp into my office on a knee that's in so much pain and they got so much inflammation. You just wonder, how do they make it in life? How do they function? Or you've been in the store before and you've watched somebody favor an ankle or a knee or a hip, and you know they are really struggling. And the message I want you to get here is, number one, if you've got chronic pain that's not going away, that means there's a problem. Okay? This ain't rocket science, but you've got inflammation. Did you know it's impossible to have pain in your body without inflammation being present? I know that's like a real simple statement, but if you're hurting somewhere, then you've got inflammation. I think the question is, what questions are you going to ask? Like, what are my options? Can I take Tylenol, an aspirin, Advil, Aleve, ibuprofen? What are the drugs that I leave out? Vioxx, Celebrex. You could just keep going, Naprosyn. The problem is, when you take those drugs, there are side effects. And I think everybody knows that. There are side effects to each and every drug that you take. Every drug. Sometimes there's even supplements that cause side effects. But that may be a different mechanism. But last time I checked, nobody bleeds out by eating garlic salt. No, it doesn't happen. When's the last time that you've heard of somebody being rushed to the emergency room because they overdosed on vitamin B12 because the tablets were made of cherry powder and the kid ate them? It never happens. I mean, if it does, I don't want to be guilty of making light of that, because if somebody did pass away from overdosing on cherry-flavored or black raspberry-flavored sublingual vitamin B12 tablets, I'd like to know about it. I wouldn't wish it on anybody. And so I just haven't heard that, and I haven't seen that. And I've done this for 32 years now, so I'm not trying to make light of people that overdose, because I think the studies show you're going to have a minimum of probably 30,000 people a year that go to the hospital because they're taking an anti-inflammatory drug. It's simple as a baby aspirin a day. Not even a full aspirin. But it starts the process of their blood vessels breaking apart and falling apart. Well, you know what? A long time ago, let's just say 300 years, maybe even 400, they figured out that if they wanted sailors to stay alive on an ocean expedition across the globe to find new trade routes for spice or trade, they had to keep their sailors alive. But there was a condition that really affected them. It was called scurvy. Now, I really think that I've seen 5 cases of scurvy in 32 years, so I'm not going to say it's super, super rare, but it's pretty uncommon. And all of it was fixed by just correcting the vitamin C levels. You always got to remember that your body needs vitamin C to maintain the integrity of your cartilage and your tendons and your ligaments and anything to do with the muscles and the bones and the joints. That's all collagen right there. And so to make sure that collagen is abundant and good shape, well, you're going to have some vitamin C. So what did they call the British sailors? They called them limeys. And I think their daily ration was, when it came from the vitamin C world, it was just 1/4 of a lime per day. I know what you're thinking. You're going, well, why 1/4 of a lime? You mean that's what they were given? Isn't that kind of chintzy? Well, I guess they had a barrel full of limes, and they tried to preserve them and make sure they lasted on the trip. So I don't know, but it's interesting. But yeah, just 1/4 of a lime. It does not say that they squeezed the lime juice directly on their fajita tacos. I'm pretty sure that a royal British sailing vessel, or with heavy, heavy armament like 40 cannons, yeah, they probably served fajita tacos on deck. No, I'm joking. Surely they didn't do that. But it only takes 1/4 of a lime to keep a sailor from developing scurvy. Basically, scurvy is when your arteries start breaking apart and you start leaking internally because the collagen that holds your arteries together, oh my goodness, it's not doing so well. Well, I looked up how much vitamin C is in 1/4 of a lime. It's estimated there's 6 milligrams. You're probably going, well, Dr. Morgan, why not just take vitamin C? Well, hear me out on this. Flavonoids are these very unique compounds. They usually accompany vitamin C. And one of the greatest reasons why I like flavonoids, which give blueberries their dark purple-black pigment, or like I talked about a couple weeks ago, cherries, that dark, deep, red, black-colored cherry. Well, that's going to be flavonoid compounds that give them that. And grapes. You know, the woman the other day, she told me something I thought was so good. She said when she has her grandkids over and they spend the night, they can ask for all the ice cream they want, which she was just telling me they do it every time. Right when you want to put them to bed and tuck them in, that's when they're hungry for their third or fourth snack after supper. You get it. I know you know that. So instead of giving them ice cream or popsicles or a cookie, she's got frozen grapes ready to go. Isn't that brilliant? If you need to give kids a bedtime snack, why not give them like frozen cherries or blackberries or blueberries, frozen grapes? Talk about spectacular. But what's more intriguing is, what are these compounds called bioflavonoids and flavonoids that are found inside of these fruits that God has given us to eat? See, there's just another example right there. All these things that God has done for us are to benefit us, to help us to stay healthy and successful. And so you need these things to make sure that your tendons are in good working order, or your cartilage, or your muscles, or the disc. And you get these flavonoids when you eat things like, you know, strawberries, blackberries, grapes, even hawthorn berries. Talked to a woman the week before with blood pressure problems, and hawthorn is one of the remarkable berry plants that helps lower blood pressure by helping to resolve the inflammation that's in the inner lining of the arteries. Okay, so I want to read this to you right here. I was trying to look this up. I know this is technical right here, but this is so cool. Flavonoids are a subgroup of a large class of molecules called phenols. Sometimes these are called polyphenols. There's more than 8,000 phenolic compounds that have been characterized and classified according to their chemical structures. Oh my goodness, did you just say 8,000? What that really means, there's probably 800 million. They just hadn't got to all of them yet. Isn't that amazing when we try to classify and characterize God's creation? This is remarkable. It says that polyphenols are complexes of phenols that are found in such foods like green tea, which to me it's very interesting. If you look at the research on green tea and its consumption as it relates to men that develop prostate cancer, I think you're going to be quite impressed. And actually, it's been shown to really go a long way to help prevent, you know, cancer in people. But you also get these polyphenol compounds. They're found in red wine. One of them in particular is called resveratrol. You've probably heard that before. Even chocolate contains some of these. Well, these aren't just any everyday substance. They're the very things you need because they're very potent antioxidants. That means they protect you from rusting and from damage and excessive oxidation. Or if you want to say prevention of spoilage or turning rancid or putrid. Anyway, you get the gist of it. But that's what they do. But they offer tremendous protection against heart disease, various cancers, especially cancers in the colon. To me, that's very interesting. These flavonoids, well, they block cancer-causing chemicals called nitrosamines. My recommendation with you, if you're going to eat bacon, you might want to get it uncured. Because if you purchase bacon or sausage at the store and it says it's preserved with nitrosamines, well, those are well-studied cancer-causing chemicals. Here's one of the main things I want you to think about just for a second. If you look at your skin, and especially around your ankles, your feet, your legs, what if you start seeing vessels that are starting to break apart? They're not truly varicose veins, but they turn dark and purple, or they, if somebody's like prone to diabetes or has it, it's going to look like somebody kind of injected rust all over their skin. Well, one of the main things that polyphenols from like cherries and blueberries and blackberries do is they protect the smallest blood vessels from leaking or from breaking. If you can do that, then what you're doing is you're preventing the destruction of collagen, which is one of the most important proteins for healthy skin and connective tissue. And when I say connective tissue, that's what holds you together. And so I'm looking at this chart right here, and they were just trying to measure, let me see what's the name of this right here. There's one compound, a flavonoid called anthocyanidine. It's going to be kind of a blue, dark red, purple. So you see them like in dark grapes and blueberries, but I start looking at this. Blueberries have, what's the unit of measurement here? Well, anyway, it doesn't say exactly. But it has the amount. And so blueberries, they have anywhere between 130 to 250. And again, I can't see the unit of measurement on this. That's my fault. But then I looked at cranberries. Cranberries were 60 to 200. I thought to myself, man, that's pretty good. Could it benefit a human being to consume cranberries? Well, if you look at the compounds that are found in them, you're going to go, yeah, I think that's going to be true. And then I looked at red grapes, and that was pretty good. And I looked at cherries, not bad. But the one that surprised me, the highest concentration, was in black raspberries. What if you liked these black raspberries to make a smoothie out of? Well, you're ahead of the game on that one. Now let me tell you what I was reading this morning. I have, every so often, I just kind of get in the mood, I want to go to the bookstore. And the nice thing about going to a bookstore, no matter which one it is, there's almost nobody there. You can pretty much walk up and down every aisle. You might say, excuse me, ma'am, I didn't mean to run into you while you're pushing a baby stroller. No, I'm just joking. You know how people come around a corner sometimes and it's like a blind corner? Well, it happens. Happened to me yesterday. Anyway, but you get to look at books. And to me, God's gift of giving you an imagination and a curiosity where you want to figure things out, I think that's a total blessing right there, don't you? Well, I've seen this book by Dr. Stephen Gundry. Supposedly, he's a pretty renowned cardiac surgeon. He's written a book called The Plant Paradox. Well, I've read a lot of stuff in there that I think is really cool. But I haven't actually purchased the book yet. But anyway, Dr. Gundry, let me read this to you right here. Renowned cardiac surgeon Stephen Gundry, he warns that the RNA COVID-19 vaccines more than double the 5-year risk for acute rupture of a coronary arterial wall with a potential for a fatal outcome. So that kind of got my attention. And so let me read this to you right here. Stephen Gundry, MD, renowned cardiac surgeon, known more by the public for his dietary advice to avoiding toxic lectins that are found in foods. And he's got a book entitled The Plant Paradox. That'd be good to look up. I've looked at it like four or five times. Maybe I should buy one instead of just looking at it. But I always look for something when I'm in a book that really piques my interest on something I'm trying to figure out. So maybe it's got it in there. Well, anyway, he's issued a precautionary red flag for the COVID-19 vaccinated patients and those still considering the vaccination because, you know, I think it's only 200 million Americans that have been vaccinated. There's like 120 that haven't, or 130, something like that. Well, he uses very highly sophisticated prognostic tests that's used by his medical group. And it's indicating that COVID-19 RNA vaccines, they increase the 5-year risk of the most feared type of an acute heart attack from 11 to 25%. That's a big number, folks. The report I'm referring to, or reading the abstract, it comes published in a recent edition of Circulation. That is a publication of the American Heart Association. So I want to say I appreciate them for doing that. And so here's the data right here. This right here, I'm going to give you a solution momentarily, but at least consider this. Dr. Gundry reports his medical group has conducted the highly predictive, and these are all in capital letters, the PULS biomarker tests. He did this on 566 patients. The PULS test, it generates a score predicting the 5-year risk, that means percentage chance, of having a new acute coronary arterial syndrome. That's defined as a range of conditions that are associated with a sudden reduced blood flow to the heart, most often caused by a plaque rupture or a clot formation in the heart's arteries. Yikes, that didn't sound good. Here's what it looks for. The PULS test, or the PULS, cardiac test, it assesses parameters such as inflammation. Well, they're looking at what's called interleukin 16 or interleukin 16. They look at cell death. They want to find out, are cells in the heart dying at a faster rate than what we can repair them or replenish them? Then there's another one called HGF. That stands for hepatocyte growth factor. And that gauges the movement of T cells. That's a type of white blood cell generated by the thymus gland. But the reason why they're moving is if they're picking up inflammation or damage. It says this score is usually assessed every 3 to 6 months among at-risk patients. This data may explain the observed heart problems following COVID-19 vaccine. Now, there's another reason why I'm reading this. I know a man, and I talked to him on the phone recently, and he's telling me that he's losing weight, he's exhausted, he's no longer able to work, his heart is not right, all following the vaccination. And on top of that, he tells me his cardiologist says, that's the reason why you're suffering. Don't get the second or a booster shot, whatever you do. Okay. These are the markers right here. When they look at the amount of inflammation by measuring a marker called interleukin 16, it rose from 35% to 82%. Folks, that's huge. Are you better off by having more inflammation? Usually not. There's a point where you have so much inflammation in your body that your body is just exhausted and overwhelmed. It just can't keep up. So you're not magically better off by saying, I'm so pleased and happy, I've got more inflammation now than what I did before. Now, the next marker they look at, and I find this interesting. Now, these are all at high-risk people. They look at cell death, and I think what he's referring to is premature death. So I'm just going to make up a number here. Let's just say the average heart cardiac cell lives for exactly 30 days. I'm just making that up. I would have to look up to see what is the average lifespan of a cardiac cell or a heart cell. But if it's supposed to live 30 days, is that a good situation for it to live only 17 days instead of the 30 days? Probably not. So they show that at following the vaccine, the COVID, the RNA COVID-19 vaccine, that cell death rose from 22% in these people that were predisposed toward coronary problems to 46%. That's more than double. Then they looked at what's called the hepatocyte growth factor, or HGF, and T-cell movement that rose from 42 to 86%. And I'm going, not good either. And so this test, the PULS test, or the POLS test, that's from Global Discovery Biosciences in Irvine, California. It is widely used by cardiologists. And so the POLS test actually measures 9 different parameters, in particular the immune response, which is activated in response to coronary arterial injury. So those markers are trying to determine, hey, has your heart been beat up by something? And let's figure it out. These unstable cardiac lesions are reported to cause 75% of all heart attacks. What's most likely? Well, a rupture is the most likely common cause of acute heart attack. These unstable lesions in a coronary artery may also lead to heart failure and blood clotting, which is a thrombosis, and it may account for these, the very same problems noted among vaccinated individuals. Okay. Now, before this publication was released, the CDC, they concede that, they're responding to it here. The center, let me just read it to you. This is what they wrote in response to Dr. Gundry's article saying that people that took the RNA vaccine are having heart problems. The Centers for Disease Control concedes inflammation, which is called myocarditis of the heart, and inflammation of the lining that surrounds the heart, that'd be pericarditis, after COVID-19 vaccination. So they're admitting it. It does happen. Okay? According to the CDC, these adverse events occur more often after the second dose and within a week of vaccination. Ah. Have you by chance heard of anyone that has passed away within 1 week after receiving the second vaccine? Well, here it is. What are the symptoms? Chest pain, shortness of breath, and feeling the heart is beating overly fast. Those are the symptoms. It says the CDC maintains the known risk of COVID-19 illness far outweigh the potential risk of having a rare adverse reaction, like this cardiac myocarditis and pericarditis. Okay. According to a review of 2.5 million messenger RNA vaccinated subjects aged 16 and older in Israel, there were 54 cases. That's 2.13 cases per 100,000 vaccinated persons were reported. You're probably thinking, 2 per 100,000, that's not even worth talking about. Well, it would be if it was your mom or dad. It would be for me. Reviewers claim most cases of carditis are mild and rare, and the benefits of COVID-19 vaccine greatly outweigh the risk. Okay? Of course, you know, have you ever heard the term dismissive? Really, really easy for someone to say, this is not a big deal, go ahead and do it. Well, I don't want anybody that I know suffering from the side effects. And if this is only 2.13 cases, then why have I already seen 7 in the last 3 months? I think the numbers are probably off. You know, there's always a problem. Can I just ask you a simple question? Let's just, everybody pretend right now that you're a medical doctor and you've sworn the Hippocratic Oath that you're going to do no harm and you're going to care for people and you're not going to do anything that would be ethically wrong, and you're going to put, basically, this is what it is. The Hippocratic Oath, on to a large degree, it has to do with the concept of you got to put your self-interest behind you. Stop thinking about how much money you're going to make or how it's going to benefit you. What the Hippocratic Oath is all about, at least this is my basic interpretation, you have to be willing to look at the needs of your patients. And you have to say, these are the ones that I'm concerned about. How are the decisions that I make, what I do, and everything else in between. How does that benefit the health of the person? What can I do to put my needs last and to put them first? Does that make sense? So really, it's supposed to be a beautiful relationship. You go to a doctor, and they put your needs above their needs. Fair enough? It's like the woman the other day, she said, I asked her, how did your visit go to the dermatologist? She said, well, it was 20 seconds long. I said, what do you mean it was 20 seconds long? I said, did he examine you? She said, no. Did he ask you any questions about your health condition? She said, no. This is a first-time visit, by the way. She said, in 20 seconds, the doctor was able to write a prescription for a corticosteroid cream that I would apply topically to my skin, and then he was gone. I said, well, what did that 20 seconds cost you? She said, $175. And then I asked a really stupid question. I asked her, I said, do you think that was maybe just a little bit dismissive? Anyway, we won't go into it, but that's just the way it is. That's what a doctor's supposed to do. They put the patient's well-being and needs up really, really high. We're talking about the benchmark of excellence. It's incredible. Okay. Where was I right here? Okay, the bottom line is, if you're listening to me and you've had a vaccine for COVID-19, it's made of messenger RNA, you're not going to probably run out to your cardiologist locally and say, I'd like to have the PULS test. That's P-U-L-S. And even if you did, what if there's 200 other million people vying for, I don't know, how many cardiologists do we have in the world right now? I don't know. But let's put it this way. They would be overrun with patients if everybody requested that. So given that if you've been vaccinated, you may not want to undergo the PULS test. Let me just read what what's the guy's name? Oh, Bill Sardi. That's right. I like Bill Sardi. Bill Sardi writes this right here. He said, I want to point your attention to the work of Dr. Linus Pauling and Dr. Matthias Rath, who showed that vitamin C is required to heal coronary arteries that feed the heart with oxygenated blood, and that a deficiency of vitamin C allows a blood protein known as lipoprotein A to serve as a sticky bandage for damaged arteries. However, lipoprotein A may then induce blood clots due to its stickiness and may close off oxygenated blood altogether. And this is kind of how people get the so-called widowmaker heart attack, which is not a good deal. And so if you're not going to go get the PULS test to see if this is your deal, what if you just very simply start taking vitamin C? That's kind of why I started talking earlier this morning about flavonoids and polyphenols and phenol compounds. Guess where they're found? They're found in blueberries and cherries and raspberries and grapes, and it's just amazing. You get a lot of flavonoids in lemons and limes. They're incredible. Dr. Matthias Rath, he went a step further, and he showed that animals that are able to produce all their own vitamin C internally, they never develop these heart attacks where you have an artery rupture or tear open or you have a massive clot. It just doesn't happen. And by the way, Dr. Rath, he wrote a book. You know what the title of it is? Why Animals Don't Get Heart Attacks, but People Do. Pretty good book. And so, I know there's a drug. I have forgotten the name of it. I just can't remember. This drug is being marketed to lower lipoprotein A. And lipoprotein A, you know what? If you wanted to, if you're concerned about your heart, you can go to the doctor anytime and say, could you please measure what's called lipoprotein A? A lot of times when you ask for it, it's going to be capital L, small P, that's for lipoprotein. And then you just put a small letter A in parentheses right by the P. So LP. A in parentheses. That's the test you're looking for. The higher that is, the more problems you're going to have. Okay? Dr. Steve Hickey of Manchester, England, and he's authored a book, The Vitamin Cure for Heart Disease. I haven't read that, but, you know, if I come across it, I'm going to look at it. He suggests 500 milligrams of vitamin C, and I'm sure he's just talking about plain Jane ascorbic acid. Okay? Five times throughout the day, given that vitamin C is rapidly excreted in the urine. Of course, if you're eating limes and lemons and grapes and stuff like that, it may be plenty good enough. Now, listen to this right here. What is the second thing you can do if you're not going to take vitamin C? All I recommend you do. There's a second thing that you can do besides taking vitamin A to make sure that that lipoprotein A doesn't make your arteries sticky and cause an artery to rupture or blood clot. Okay. There's nobody that wants to have blood where clots form. Nope, you're not going to choose that. You want your blood to flow at a high rate of speed. The faster that blood flows through your arteries, the cleaner it is. That is one of the reasons why not moving is not good for you. And that's another reason why when your blood is super, super thick, you're going to have health problems. Well, there's two other things I need you to look at. They've shown that both a substance called fibrin and platelet clots, they form so much more readily following this COVID-19 vaccine. And so here's another blood test that you can ask for. There is a blood test called D-dimer. 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 And that test indicates whether fresh blood clots are forming following vaccination. And you may want to ask your doctor about that test. You might want to say, what about D-dimer? Well, besides vitamin C being extremely important along with flavonoids at lowering lipoprotein A, that sticky stuff in your arteries, well, guess what is a natural blood thinner that lowers D-dimer levels? Now, you need to run this by your cardiologist. That is, if you can get an appointment, or your medical doctor. But it's the molecule in red wine known as resveratrol. The studies show that it does a good job of a natural blood thinner, but it lowers D-dimer levels. So D-dimer levels, they go up on a lab test when you're getting fresh blood clots following the vaccination. So nobody needs a ton of fibrin and clots forming. No. Oh my goodness, I just see the clock. I've been rambling here for how long now? I better go to the phone lines. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morse.
How are you?
I'm doing really good at the moment. How about yourself?
Great, thanks.
Well, I was calling to get some input from you about male problems.
This is a family-friendly program, so just you can talk. What kind of male problems are we talking about?
Dry throat and peeing a lot, especially at night.
Okay. Did you say dry throat?
Yes, sir.
Okay, that means you're probably breathing with your mouth open big time.
Well, no. Breathing through my nose. And
you have any proof of that?
Yes.
Well, that's not proof. Not for me, it's not. Let me just tell you what I'm thinking real quick, and if it doesn't pan out, tell me just to scratch that topic. We'll go on to plan B.
All right.
What you could do just very simply is you could try getting some Breathe Right nasal strips. They have the name brand, and they also have just the Equate brand you can buy off the shelf.
Okay.
You ever tried those before?
I'm wearing one now.
Okay. Then you have. The next thing is you got to keep your jaw closed at night.
I wear a gizmo to keep my mouth closed.
Okay. You got that covered too then.
Yes, sir.
Here's what happens. If your blood pressure increases because you're starving for oxygen, your body says, oh, no, what are we going to do here? So it releases a surge of adrenaline. Adrenaline's going to increase the heart rate and increase your blood pressure. So the next problem is your body says, well, goodness, why is blood pressure increasing in the middle of the night? What are we going to do about that? It says we should release some diuretic hormones so we can get rid of the excess fluid in the arteries. And so we're going to tell the kidneys at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's time to start removing excess water from the bloodstream. But you know what the net result is? You got a whole bunch of urine all night long. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
So something like that mechanism is happening. And so what we got to do is we got to find out what's going on here. So number one, if you wanted to try, this is just going to be the simplest recommendation that I can make.
Okay.
If you tried eating just two meals a day, What that does is it creates a feeding window where you're going to get all the food you're ever going to get within about a 7-hour window. Some people do it 6. I've seen people near death many times use a 4-hour window. But I can tell you this, they're motivated to live. And that's a pretty powerful motivation once you see it, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So you could do that. The next thing that I would recommend, if water is just going right through you, you might actually have some electrolyte or mineral deficiency above and beyond what you'd be able to pick up on with a blood test.
I see.
So there's a lot of ways that you can go about this. Number one, if you try just very simply, just eating a very simple diet, I mean, the range of what you can eat is huge, but you're trying to avoid all grains. And let me kind of break down one of the reasons why.
Okay.
If you took hydrogen peroxide from a brand new bottle and poured it down the bathroom sink, actually, let me change that real quick. If you poured it down the sink that I used this morning, guess what's going to happen? It's probably going to foam and bubble, isn't it?
Right.
Because that's what it does. Right. And when hydrogen peroxide breaks down, it breaks down into water and oxygen. That, how harmful is that? Well, not harmful for the sink. But when you consume carbohydrates that come from grains or come from sugar, they only break down into carbon dioxide and water. And so one of the things that's going to happen, if a person is lacking sufficient amounts of protein, and if they're getting less protein or fat, usually what that means is they're getting more carbohydrates to kind of fill in the gaps. Because, I mean, you know what it's like to be hungry, don't you?
Oh, yes.
But I do not know what it's like to be hungry like somebody from the South Sudan or North Korea or India, someplace like that. I have no experience like that. That'd be horrible.
Exactly.
But if you do not eat grains for about 2 to 3 weeks or eat refined sugar, you're going to see if a lot of this nighttime urination goes away.
Well,
and you're going to see if you can start holding moisture where it belongs because if your throat is getting dry. I mean, that's just one of the things I have to go through. I mean, sleeping on your side with your head elevated, you can always try elevating the bed by 4 to 6 inches at the head post. That has been shown to work wonders on improving circulation to the brain.
Okay.
And then we're talking about minerals. And so you could even try every glass of water or bottle of water that you consume throughout the day. You just take a small pinch of Celtic salt or Himalayan salt, or do you go to the health food store like Drug Emporium or Natural Grocer, places like that, Sprouts,
yes.
Granary?
Mm-hmm.
They have a salt called Redmond Sea Salt. You ever seen that?
Yes, I have.
Well, you could even try a little pinch of that, but what it contains is they contain minerals. Minerals are what have total responsibility over holding water where it belongs. And so those are things you can look at. The next thing that I look at is going to be the kidneys. So this is only an example. I'm not saying it even relates to you, but in some people, if they use stevia as something to kind of like a flavor, like a raspberry flavored tea, I shouldn't say raspberry flavor, it's made from raspberry, but if you use stevia, some people, because of the high calcium oxalate content of the stevia, it just literally irritates the kidneys. And so the kidneys want to wash that irritation out. So the net result is they urinate all night long.
Wow.
And so that would be a possibility that I look at. But you don't even consume stevia, do you?
No, sir.
Okay, good deal. Do you use any artificial sweeteners at all?
Oh, no. When I heard about that.
Yeah, I didn't think you
cancer.
Did. But I kind of said that for the benefit of anybody else listening. Exactly. Is there any possibility that you have more stress in your life than what you can really handle?
At this point, no.
Good. Is there any possibility or probability you got a low-grade infection somewhere?
Very possible, because I have some nasal issues. I've been using nasal spray for about a month now.
This happened to me maybe a month ago. If I'm wrong on the date, I can't miss it by much, but the gentleman with chronic breathing problems at night and sinus problems, what he told me was when he came in, he says, "Oh my goodness, Dr. Morgan, this is the best I have felt in 10 years. So he doesn't know this, but this is my secret trick I play on people. I turn to him and say, "Man, that's fabulous. Tell me, why do you think that is? What happened?" I'm just teasing, but what he said was, he said, I really think this is the first time in 10 years I haven't been dealing with chronic sinus infections and allergies. I'm going, way to go. And one of the things that I remember he chose to do of his own free will is to use a nebulizer with just a little bit of food-grade hydrogen peroxide. But you tell me, breathing really, really well at night is a game-changer for deep sleep, isn't it?
Yes, it is, no doubt.
The other thing that he definitely had was what I would call a dairy allergy, which, what do you do when you come face-to-face with what you believe a dairy allergy? Well, there's nothing that works like total avoidance from dairy.
I'm not a dairy person, so I can say not total, but I would say 98%.
Well, and but that was his deal. I have no way of knowing if that would even relate to you. But if you have a continual, ongoing, low-grade infection, like in the paranasal sinuses or the ethmoids, maxillary sinuses, tonsils, mm-hmm. I'm telling you, that's usually a deal-breaker for most people, because what happens is, if you have a bacteria living in your sinuses and it's just not going away, then it's emitting its waste, and that's causing massive amounts of irritation and inflammation to be produced. And in a roundabout way, I mean, do you think that might be one possibility that could relate to you, that you could have a low-grade sinus infection?
Yes.
Then that's probably what we need to go with right there. And so it's not like we're going to videotape you all night long, unless you want to. Then you could actually look at what is a video show at 2 in the morning. And it may be that you're snoring like crazy and you have no way of knowing it, seriously. You know how I know that is? Because I shouldn't laugh at this, but sometimes it's really comical. I have wives, the moment I bring that question out, they say, wait, Dr. Morgan, let me show you this video on the cell phone. And the husband's rolling his eyes going, great. But he doesn't know it, but she'll just show. It sounds like somebody's trying to break down the back door. Garbage trunk is dumping a big dumpster. I'm just joking, but it just has so much noise, and the person doesn't even know how hard it is to breathe. And when you have a hard time breathing in the middle of the night, your body has no choice but to pump out some adrenaline to save your life. And it wakes you up going, hey, maybe we need to go to the bathroom and dump the water.
Well, I do take a xylitol tabs at night to keep my saliva content up, to keep my throat from not being so dry.
One thing that I would look at, there's one superfood that I believe really, really helps maintain the moisture of the body. And one of the mechanisms, it seems to help greatly improve and regulate electrolytes like sodium and potassium. The weaker ones may be magnesium, calcium, and then you got a big one called chloride. But the consumption of fish oil, how many hundreds of years have mothers been giving their kids fish oil because they want to give them every opportunity to be as strong and healthy as possible? But that does play a role. But on top of that, the fish oil, if it's good, high-quality stuff, there's two ways that you can test it. You can break it open like a gel cap, or just pour some liquid on a piece of styrofoam overnight, like a styrofoam cooler. If the fish oil starts to dissolve and eat a hole in it, like somebody drops some acid on it, that means it's rancid or bad. That's the kind that if you take it and swallow it, you'll be burping it up and tasting it the rest of the day. And you'll go, I don't like Dr. Morgan. This fish oil is the pits. The other way is, if you put it in the freezer overnight, if it turns as hard as a rock, well, it has lost its ability to act like antifreeze. It's no good at that point. And so those are two different ideas, but fish oil consumption is huge for helping reduce inflammation in the body.
All right. Well, that fish oil test, does that work for liquid fish oil?
Yeah, it does.
DHA.
Yeah, so just take it. Yeah, is it liquid in the freezer?
You know, I've never put it in the freezer. So
you can test it that way, but literally, you'll get these compounds formed that'll start to eat through plastic and styrofoam. It's not good.
Right. Well, let me ask, can the fish oil be stored in the freezer until ready to use?
You know what? I'm kind of spoiled rotten because life is a hurry, and I just choose to get it from gel caps. That means it'll be stable at room temperature, and they've already sealed out the oxygen, so they're preserved. and they keep for a while. But then again, if you open a bottle of supplements, just use them up and be done with them.
I see.
So even the big bottle that I use, it lasts me about a month and a half or so. And once I go through it, I try to tell myself, get another one, Roy. And it's so good for the brain. It's, I mean, you've heard of the DHA being a really high concentration of mother's breast milk.
Yes.
I mean, they even try to imitate that by saying, this milk formula that you give a kid in a Bible, in a bottle, while you're reading the kid the Bible, right?
Okay, I'll take that.
Yeah, but it's supposed to be something, it's a superfood for the brain and for your eyes and for the nervous system and for your arteries and veins. But I still think, from what you're telling me, that would probably be one of the things that I would have to bear out if I was trying to solve the mystery. Is there any possibility that you have a continual infection of your sinuses? And if you do, it'd be a pretty good bet to focus your energy on that, because usually it's been my experience, if you can solve that, or if you have a food allergy you're just not aware of, that just means if you eat something, a substance, whatever it is, it could be, it could be peanut butter. If you eat something that causes your body to respond with inflammation, that can cause your problems. It's just a matter of where does it go.
I try to operate like that.
So that's what I look at, allergy or infection as the number one cause of your problems. Unless you told me there's structural damage and you said, I forgot to tell you, I've had 14 broken noses because I used to be a professional boxer or something like that. Is that the case?
No, I'm not that daring. All right. Well, that gives me plenty of food for thought.
Yeah, but even what I told you earlier about the gentleman that used a nebulizer, and he nebulized just a very small amount. His call, his choice, food-grade hydrogen peroxide. Amazing,
nebulized.
Amazing results. Now, at the same time, he did have to avoid the food that he was reacting to. And the other thing is, then we can start focusing on what do we do to strengthen the tissues, which I remember being in school, we took histology classes, the tissues that line your sinuses. To me, they looked exactly identical to what was in your throat or stomach or small intestine or colon. So I think it's all the same tissue.
Sounds like it does to me. I mean,
something that affects your immune system and your gut. Yeah, it's related. You're right.
Yeah, from start to finish, from mouth to throat to intestine.
Yeah.
How can it not be?
Yeah, exactly. You asked a better question. How could it not be? I agree with you.
Well, you got something to
think about, but that's what I want you to consider. And hopefully we can find a way to resolve this where you can breathe great at night.
Well, I'm working on it. I just needed some outside opinion,
You betcha. Well, I'm rooting for you, man.
Very good, sir. Thank you much for
taking
my
have call. A great weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, there's a phone line once again open, 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Nope. Now I got it. Okay. Once they hang up, then I can do a phone line again. The number is 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. Your call was right on for me this morning.
Oh, good.
But I have a deep vein thrombosis. And this is not my first, but my first and second one were following knee surgery. This time, there's no explanation other than I did get the COVID vaccine in September, October of this
year. And that one test I told you about is called D, as in
D-dimer.
David. Yeah, D-dimer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the higher that is, the more prone you're going to be to have a deep vein thrombosis. So,
yeah, I had tests previous years of all the clotting mechanisms and factors. Would that have been included in that?
I don't know unless I looked at it.
Cascade, okay.
So, sorry I can't answer the question, but I know what, we can solve the mystery real quick by taking a look.
All right.
If it does, great, and if it doesn't, you know, the interesting thing is, if I saw the test and they did order a D-dimer and it was elevated, would you have remembered if the doctor explained that that is one of the best markers for determining if you're about to have a clot or a thrombosis?
Oh, no, they didn't explain that.
Yeah, but if you'd heard that, you'd say, I'm going to remember that one.
Yeah.
Well, just remember what I read, the research, and I kind of skipped through it quickly because I realized I rambled on for like 30-plus minutes, but it was talking about the use of resveratrol.
Yes, and I had recently stopped my sugar and stopped the wine.
Oh, well, you might want to you might want to reconsider some of that. Hey, one thing that I cannot do, it's against the law for me to try to make any medical claims about anything. So
Sure. If
I were to get on the radio and say, ma'am, I 100% guarantee you this clot will go away if you take a flavonoid called Hawthorne, I can't do that. So I am not telling you right now that I can guarantee anything when you take Hawthorne. I'm not even telling you to take Hawthorne to dissolve blood clots. But you know how many people I've seen with deep venous thrombosis tell me that there's dissolved and went away with Hawthorne?
Well, of course, I'm on this real expensive medicine now for a week. And what I'm concerned about, since this is my third, is they're going to want to put me on long-term blood thinners, and I really don't want to do that.
Well, why don't you ask for the D-dimer test?
Okay, I will do
that. So here's what I would do if I were you, and I'll try to slow it down. There's one test called D-dimer. You got that.
Mm-hmm.
There's another one that's called fibrinogen.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the word fibrin and then ogen.
Gen. Okay.
That didn't even sound right. The other one is called lipoprotein A. It's a capital L, then a small P, and then in parentheses you have a small A.
Okay.
That's the one that shows damage to the arteries where you start to get a clot that breaks off or a rupture leading to a big clot. So that's important. The other thing that I like is I really like looking at platelet levels. Platelets are incredible. And so I would not prefer the platelets to be above 400. The higher the platelets are, the more inflammation you have swimming in the ocean of the blood, which is not what you want.
Right. Okay.
So did I tell you I am not trying to promise Hawthorne will remove the clot?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, so I've given you full disclosure that I can't promise you it'll dissolve it, did I?
How much would you not take?
Ma'am, you're more clever than I am right now. You're trying to trick me, aren't you? Well, I would not take 3 to 4 a day. I would not.
Okay. Thank you so much, Dr. Martin.
You have been warned.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Yeah, I know what I'm doing here. I'm getting tricked by clever, clever people. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. One quick question.
Yes, sir.
Let me turn this radio down.
Oh, thank you so much.
I am trying to drink lemon juice daily and to help clean out my system. But anyway, I am taking lemon juice daily in a smoothie. And I read where that would injure the your teeth, the enamel on your teeth. So if you put lemon juice in a smoothie, will that lemon juice affect your teeth? Like just drinking straight lemon juice.
Well, what I want to know is if you were a sailor in 1689 and they gave you limes or lemons to prevent scurvy, what did that do to their teeth? I don't know.
But
lemon juice is an amazing substance. It has tremendous benefits. But like anything else, there's a time and place where if you get too much on your enamel, it may start to break down your enamel prematurely. So...
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on how much lemon juice that you're using, because if you dilute it like in water, for example, usually it doesn't have a bad consequence that I know
okay.
of.
Okay. Well, I'm putting it in a smoothie that is a concentration of Brussels sprouts and vegetables. It's a total vegetable smoothie.
Man, you're trying to do good by yourself.
With lemon peel and one lemon that's about maybe 32 ounces of the other ingredients with water.
Wow, 32 ounces. That's amazing.
So anyway, that's what I drink during the day. Try to drink it each day. And so I didn't know whether I should stop daily on the juice and maybe just use the pills every other day or something like that.
One thing that I just remembered or thought of years ago, they did a study, and how they did this is they took teeth from a donor. That just means somebody that had donated their body to science, you know, like a cadaver.
Right.
And what they did was they tried all sorts of things to see what would cause the most massive erosion of their teeth. And I want to say lemon was in there, but you know what was number one that destroyed the teeth faster than anything else?
No,
I'm probably going to get in trouble for this, but should I tell the truth?
Yes.
It was Red Bull.
Oh.
And I thought to myself, there's a reason that you don't want to drink a Red Bull.
That's right.
And so when I looked at that, and you know what was protective of the teeth? And so you got to take this one with a grain of salt also, because these were cadaver teeth. And they covered them in pure chocolate. When I say pure chocolate, I don't mean Milky Way, a Three Musketeers, or a Hershey's Kiss. That's like a bowl of sugar right there, very little chocolate in. But chocolate was very, very protective. I thought, oh my goodness, you mean there's good things in plants that God's given us to protect our teeth? Yeah. But the other thing that I thought of, and I just want to be really good to you today, I'm telling you, lemons are amazing. I remember one study where they gave, there's a citric oil or a citrus oil from lemon called limonene.
Right.
And of course, you get that from the peels when you juice them or whatever. But limonene really, really has been shown to inhibit breast cancer cells from really growing and taking off and doing everything they shouldn't do.
Well,
so I think you're doing these things to truly help yourself. But just brush your teeth and rinse your mouth afterwards, and hopefully that'll be good.
Okay. Okay.
And stay away from red. I'm joking.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of your holiday.
You too. Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye. Okay. I'm assuming I have like 20 seconds left, so let's have a go with 20 seconds left. Number one, it's good to think about your health. Let me give you a couple reasons why. Your health is your ticket to not using every resource you've got dealing on sickness and disease. I'm just telling you right now, you can't afford it. There's very few people that can afford to be sick. If you're self-employed, kind of like I am, but I like it that way, though. I'm not complaining. I wouldn't have it any other way. You need to be radiant and healthy so you can be strong and you can keep working, because work is fun. Work is a gift from God. Not everybody is going to agree with me on a topic, but I'm telling you this. It is a total blessing from God. He is so good to us. He knows what he's doing. You want your body to keep serving you well, then keep working. And so make good choices today. And Lord willing, I'll be back this time next week.